Monday.
I am Farha Khan. This is Prof Talk. New BC research has begun to show why premature babies are incredibly fragile and susceptible to infections following birth. Researchers have recently discovered an immune deficiency that explains why preterm babies are vulnerable to infections, which can be life-threatening and harmful to brain development and sometimes come with lifelong effects. Dr. Pascal Larroy, who is my guest today on Prof Talk, wanted to know why common bacterial infections threaten the lives of 1 in 4 preterm babies. He is a scientist and clinical assistant professor in the Division of Neonatology, Department of Pediatrics here at UBC. He's also a neonatologist at BC Children's Hospital and BC Women's Hospital and Health Center, and regularly cares for small prematurely born infants needing intensive medical care early in life. Dr. Larroy joins me in the live here in the CITR studio. Pascal, welcome to Prof Talk.
Thank you, Farah. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, let's begin a discussion about preterm babies. When is an infant considered premature? And generally speaking, what kind of medical intervention is needed when a baby is born premature?
Well, people are used to think of pregnancy in terms of month, and we speak in terms of weeks, which is a little bit more accurate. So a normal pregnancy is about 40 weeks. When babies are born less than 37 weeks, so about a month before their time, then that's what we start talking about prematurity. And obviously, to answer your second questions, the issues and the problems that they go through depends on how premature they are and how small they are, and that is sort of a gradient over. And we have babies that are as little as 3 months ahead of their time, so 23, 24 weeks, and that is really the where medicine has reached a limit in terms of being able to save these little babies. So,
now, premature babies born very early often remain inside incubators for long periods in the neonatal intensive care unit. Can you describe for us what the NICU is, or sort of what the whole system of the NICU is about?
Yeah, for several parents, the NICU can be stressful and noisy. It's kind of a noisy environment as well. So it's an intensive care environment, so babies are monitored 24 hours, so we would continuously monitor their vital signs, their heart rate, how fast they're breathing, how much oxygen they're requiring, and so on. So some of these babies can be really, really sick, so intensive care does involve a lot of technology, which can be stressful to parents. So at BC Children's, we have the biggest unit in the province, and that we see about 600, 700 babies a year that are admitted to within our intensive care unit. So I say BC Children's, also I should say BC Women's and BC Children's Hospital, because really this is a joint hospital with obviously with that involves care for mothers who give birth to these premature babies.
Now, there's different levels of the NICU sort of system. So the one at BC Children's and Women's is at one of the higher levels in terms of care. Is that correct?
Yes. So it's a referral center for the province. So we get babies from all around BC and the Yukon as well when they reach a level of illness that can be looked after in so-called peripheral centers. So we are level 3 units. So there's 3 level 3 units in the province at the moment. and one is on the Vancouver Island in Victoria, and the other one is the Royal Columbian Hospital. But only one of these three units does some very specialized care, like in some babies may need surgeries and so on. So we're the only level three unit that's attached to a dedicated pediatric center.
Now, what kinds of factors affect premature infants' chances of survival?
Well, obviously, how small they are. As I said earlier, babies as small as 23 and 24 weeks, so that'll be almost a bit over 3 months ahead of time would be able to survive, and some may weigh only a pound. So obviously all their organs are at this age are not completely developed and need assistance to develop properly for the weeks to come after they're born. So obviously the size of the infant is a big factor, but also how healthy the mother is, strangely, and how whether there's we call comorbidities or factors that are associated with prematurity that make the infant sicker than he or she would be just because of prematurity. And then some of these examples are infections, and that's why infections is unfortunately is relatively common in preterm babies, and that's why I focus my my research at the Child and Family Research Institute, trying to understand what factors, why babies, preterm babies are so vulnerable to infection, but also how it affects their short-term and long-term health.
And so what kinds of medical interventions would a baby born very early have in the NICU?
So they have, they may, because their lungs are immature, they, relatively important portion of them may need oxygen sometimes, what we call positive pressure ventilation, which is essentially just a little mask on them to help them breathe, or that delivers a little bit of pressure to help the lungs open up. But not unusually, especially those that are most immature, may require to go on a mechanical ventilator, and that's more invasive, and that involves a breathing tube in the trachea to support them while their lungs grow, and that could be for several weeks. So that's one thing, the lungs immaturity. And the other big factors is that many premature babies are not, obviously for reasons of size and immaturity, not able to feed independently. So some may need intravenous nutrition for a prolonged period of time, for as much as a few weeks, and then sometimes also and after this they need help to be fed through a little gavage tube in the stomach to until they become well enough to be bottling by themselves.
Can you give us an overview of the clinical field of neonatology? What do you do on a daily basis as a neonatologist?
Well, it's very varied. Neonatology is a branch of pediatric that specializes in health and medical problem and health of newborns and infants, newborns in particular. So obviously, babies are a very high-risk and vulnerable group of patient because they can't speak for themselves, and they're small, and they're, as I was speaking about, the immaturity of their organs. And so they have problems that are very unique to themselves. So part of my daily activity, so I do intensive care for babies. So I look after babies who have illness that threaten their life. So most of the time, these are cardiorespiratory problems. So there are problems with breathing in the heart. So these are quite serious. We, as a neonatologist at BC Women's and BC Children's, will be acting as a consultant for the province. So a pediatrician in the province might have need advice or might have difficulty finding the right thing to do with a very difficult, complex baby, a case of a baby that's very ill. So they would refer to him or her to BC Children's Hospital. So it's a very high risk, high acuity medical environment. So we deal on a daily basis with problems that are life threatening. And a part of this, we don't just do intensive care medicine. We also involve, and all of us have different interests, and there's lots of structure that is involved into maintaining a provincial intensive care program in Vancouver and in BC, and some of my colleagues are more involved in that, and also there's the education part where physicians are coming to Vancouver around from across the world to train to learn neonatology. So we do a lot of education, bedside and formal teaching, and then the other big category is the research. There's lots of things that are not known or not clear in medicine, and our goal is to improve care as much as possible over time, so that's why these problems, these unknown questions can be best addressed through a scientific, rigorous scientific way, and that's how we learn from previous mistakes, or we learn to do medicine different ways, and hopefully we improve care of babies. So research, education, and medicine are the three big activities that that take much of our time, daily time work.
And you also, from the clinical side of things, you do spend a great deal of time with babies, their mothers, their fathers, as well as mothers that are expecting to have a premature baby, so the bedside. You mentioned that. Can you talk a little bit about that and your interaction with the families?
So we usually get involved even before birth, because that's where the problem may start, but delivery of a baby that has many of these medical problems that these babies face can be known from before birth, before the baby's delivered, and that's because they're with the ultrasound technologies nowadays, they can see the fetus very well, and they can sometimes diagnose malformations or things that may require surgery after birth. So often we are asked to talk to parents and help the obstetrician plan the intervention right at the time of delivery and soon after. So we meet with parents and try to help them anticipate as much as possible how things are going to happen afterwards, because sometimes it can be things can happen very rapidly, and then it can be very stressful for parents. We're talking about the deliveries that are very different than the traditional way that people anticipate having their baby. You know, some people even like to have it at home and in a private environment. And delivery in itself is a very personal experience. And illness or potential illness in babies can change that in a very major and dramatic way. So very often we'll meet the parents before the delivery to talk about these and then plan the medical intervention the baby's going to require right after birth. Birth is a very stressful moment in life, and is a transition that involves very sophisticated, I could say, physiological events. So some babies need intervention right at the first minute when they're born, and that needs to be planned carefully. So that's how we get involved with parents before the delivery.
And after the delivery, some of these babies can spend long periods in the NICU. What kind of resources are there for the families that go through this experience of you know, being separated from their babies?
Well, thanks to a lot of donations, I suppose, the foundation, the BC Women's and Foundations and private donations, and there are some support available for families. Suppose you live in Prince George and then you have a premature baby that is going to require 3 months in the hospital, and that medical care can only be delivered or can only happen in Vancouver, then that's quite a stressful change in life, and then parents sometimes need to quit their job, move down to Vancouver for a couple of months. We have babies who may need to be hospitalized for months, longer than that. So there are facilities that are available to accommodate parents in Vancouver through our social workers, and then psychological support to families. And so really we're multidisciplinary environments. We're not just focused on medical problems, cardiorespiratory health, even that is the life-threatening component. And as you said, there's a lot of things around it that needs to be addressed, and that's why we the design of our comprehensive care program, we call it family-centered care, requires a lot of work and from different specialists to develop.
Now, you're a clinical scientist as well, and you're part of the Child and Family Research Institute in Vancouver. And in your recent research, you discovered that babies born before 29 weeks gestation were deficient in a protein that helps defend the body from invading bacteria. What protein is this, and can you tell us more about what you've learned?
Yes, so maybe I'll explain a little bit what the context of this research. Babies that are born prematurely are far more susceptible to infections than adults or babies born at term. So already the newborn is a high-risk period for infection, but even when we try to control for all the other factors that may explain why an individual is vulnerable to an infection, and babies that are born, especially those born early in gestation, before 29 weeks, are about 100-fold more susceptible to infection. So, unfortunately, even though we take all the measures to have good hand washing and sterilization and clean practice in the environment, in the NICU environment, up to 20-25% of our babies born at the lower end of gestation will acquire an invasive infection. And that is the mortality or the risk to the baby of dying can be really high because of they're so small. And we also worried about the long-term consequence of an infection in survivors. So we tried to explain why these babies are so vulnerable to infection. And obviously, any other organs, the lungs, we talked earlier about the lungs being immature, bowel or the gut that is immature as well, while the immune system is also immature. And so we're trying to understand what is it in that immaturity that may explain why these babies are so vulnerable to infection. So we compare the one component of the immune system that's called the innate immune system between a group of preterm babies and a group of term babies born at term. The innate immune system is really our first line immune defense. So those that are triggered within minutes and hours after a bacteria or a virus gets into our body. So we look at different features of the innate immune system in preterm babies and found that there's a molecule called P40 that's really important for the defense, the innate immune function that's lacking in preterm babies. And P40 is a protein that's composing essential cytokines that are messaged that white blood cells use to talk to each other. So when this is deficient, then the immune system doesn't talk to each other very well and can't mount the appropriate response to an infection. So we know that if we take mice and we delete the gene that's producing this molecule P40, then the mouse are really susceptible to infection. So that was the first thing that maybe that protein is important in for immunity and for immune defense in general. So when we found out that this protein was deficient in preterm baby, we then look at whether that could be associated with their high risk of infection. And then we found that babies who have the lowest level of P40 are the ones that develop an infection later on in the early neonatal period. So that was very interesting because as a major component of our immune system, we think that eventually we'll be able to stimulate this program to produce these molecules and help protect babies against infection.
And what other areas are you researching with your team?
Well, that's one component of the immune system that's, I'd say, not necessarily weak, but immature in babies that are born prematurely, but they might be other components. And I think to understand fully how we can prevent infections in babies, we need to find out where in those other areas the immune system's deficient. So we have different projects looking at the other components of our body's immune defense. The other big area of research is trying to understand why these babies have these don't make these protein or P40, for example. And I like to think that nature has a reason to do things the way things are done. And one reason may be that before you're born, then you're not really supposed to be exposed to bacteria or microbes. So why would you need powerful immune defense? These immune defense might just be make you at risk of causing damage, because these are like the different components of our immune system are like little bombs that if in a field that's very in a preterm baby where the organs are very immature, very vulnerable because they're developing, then certainly we know that an immune response that's too strong can cause damage to the brain, to the lungs, to the bowel. So there's a reason why these defense are suppressed, and I think that's to protect the baby from damage from an excessive immune response. So in order to be able one day to fix this and to boost babies' immune system, then we need to understand what potential damage this intervention may cause. So we're looking at the effect of an excessive immune response on the body in general and in preterm babies, and trying to see direct harmful effect that could be prevented or detected and then prevented if we were going to boost the immune system.
Now, a lot of this research requires funding, and a lot of it comes privately. So can you give us a contact for your research team, or can someone contact you directly if there's an interested donor in funding some of this research?
Yes, yeah, so the best people to contact would be the BC Children's Hospital Foundation. They fund medical care through the new hospital that they're planning in Vancouver, and that new hospital is needed because of the growing population in Vancouver and in general. And they also fund a lot of the research and the infrastructure, and they help us turn donation dollars into funding that's attracted from the federal government, the provincial government, and other private agencies. So probably the BC Children's Foundation would be the first place to go.
Okay,
and
perfect.
For people to talk to.
Well, thank you, Pascal, for joining us today. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
I've just been speaking with Dr. Pascal Lavoie, who is a clinical assistant professor in the UBC Division of Neonatology. And you're tuned in to Prof Talk on UBC CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver and via live web streaming on CITR.ca. In 2 weeks, I will speak with Dr. Mauricio Drelchman from the Department of Economics. We will discuss some of his scholarship on the history of economics and also look at some of his research on early modern Spain. If you would like to hear a podcast of this show or any previous episode of Prof Talk, you can visit citr.ca, and please do check out our blog at ubcproftalk.blogspot.com. I am Farha Khan. Thank you for listening today.